It's tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. Mark Livonia with you for This Hour of Variety. Later on, it's the Radio Almanac with Orson Welles, but right now, lots of talent showcased on the Seal Test Variety Theater, hosted by Dorothy L'Amour, with special guests musician Kay Kaiser and actor Brian Dunleavy. In the same year, he was starring on the silver screen in two motion pictures, Impact, alongside Ella Raines and Charles Coburn, and The Lucky Stiff, with Dorothy L'Amour as the lead. This episode from February 24th, 1949, on NBC.
Seal Test presents Seal Test Variety Theater. Yes, it's Seal Test Variety Theater with Henry Russell and his orchestra, the Crew Chiefs Quartet, a man who has thrilled American moviegoers with his great performances, Brian Dunleavy, and from the College of Fun and Knowledge, the old professor himself, Kay Kaiser. And now here she is, our gal Thursday, the singing star of our show, Dorothy L'Amour.
Hi, this is Dottie. Thanks a lot. Gee, I hope I look nice tonight because we've got some special company coming over and I...
Hi, Dottie, honey gal.
Well, if it isn't the old Professor Kay Kaiser. Gee, it's good to see you, Kay. How are you?
Oh, just stand there, Dottie. Don't move. Let me feast my eyes on you. And that dress, wow.
Do you like it? It's made of jersey.
Jersey? Sure fits mighty snug around Hoboken.
That's what I love about you southern gentlemen. You always say the right thing to a lady.
Well, it's mighty easy to say the right thing to you, ma'am. After all, you're a daughter of the South I love, ma'am, ma'am, ma'am.
Say, yes, sir. Say, your family really settled down there a long time ago, didn't they?
Are you kidding? My grandfather was the man who invented the cotton gin.
The cotton gin?
Sure, he was the first man in the South to drink gin with a cotton chaser.
You can kid all you want, but it must have been a lot of fun in the South in the old days. Sometimes I...
Hey, does anybody object if a Yankee says hello?
Well, Brian Dunleavy. Hello, Brian. Make yourself at home.
Thanks, Dottie. Hello, Kay.
Hiya, Brian.
Hey, what are you two up to?
Well, we were just talking about the old days, you know. It seems like people didn't scurry around so much then.
You said it. All people think about now is making money. Money and more money. Why, in the old days when my father was married and to my mother, he was making $6 a week. He brought up our whole family on that.
On $6 a week? How did you make out?
We starved.
You know, folks got along without a lot of the things in those days that we take for granted now. For instance, there was no radio then.
That's right. I wonder what a fellow and a girl did when he courted her and they'd sit in the living room before the radio was invented.
I can tell you.
What?
Same thing they do now, only without music.
Thank you, Kay Kaiser, Brian Dunleavy, and Dottie. And now, a few words from a man who knows what he's talking about.
Get the best, get Seal Test, ice cream eclairs.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have here an absolute sensation, a delectable creation, genuine Seal Test ice cream eclair. Hurry, hurry.
Now, wait a minute, mister. You don't have to sell Seal Test ice cream eclairs. They're so delicious, they sell themselves. Why, that combination of Seal Test ice cream heaped on fudge-covered cake with a rich chocolate frosting and whipped cream topping is the new taste sensation. So, mister,
you
better...
You say it has a whipped cream topping? Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to eat these genuine eclairs myself. So step right out, folks. Hurry, hurry to your Seal Test dealers and...
Get the best, get Seal Test ice cream eclairs.
Here's Dottie, and here's Hank Russell and the orchestra, and here's the crew chiefs, and here's a new top tune, A Little Bird Told Me.
A little bird told me that you love me, and I believe that you do. little bird told me I was falling, falling for no one but you. There's no use denying, I might as well confess. Of all the boys I know, dear, I'm sure I love you the best. A little bird told me we'd be happy, and I believe that it's true. A little bird told me we'd be married, and I believe that it's true. This little bird told me when we marry, we'll have a pretty cottage not too far, all fenced in like a movie star.
Great big pup, we call him Ace, lying there by the fireplace.
Goldfish pond and a wishing well.
Everything's gonna turn out swell.
A little bird told me we'd be happy.
Doo-doo-doo, and we.
Now I know that it's true.
In June, it's bound to come true.
That was mighty nice going in the vocal department, Lemoore.
Well, thank you, Don Levy. And just to refresh your memory on something, here we are again.
What do you mean, Dottie?
Well, don't you remember what you said when we finished making Lucky Stiff over at United Artists?
Sure. I said it's been a lot of fun, and I hope we do it again sometime.
Well, this is the time, because we have a little comedy sketch written just for us. And if John Lang will do the honors, we can get going.
As the curtain rises again on the Seal Test Variety Theater stage, we are in the apartment of the Carters. Dorothy and her husband, Brian, are known to their millions of radio listeners as America's most perfectly married couple. And as every morning, here they are having breakfast on the air.
Brian, darling.
What is it, Dottie, dear?
You know, sitting opposite you this way at breakfast always reminds me of what a beautiful world this is.
Yes, sweetheart, isn't it?
Wouldn't it be simply wonderful if all the married couples listening in could be as happy as we are?
They could be if all the wives were as sweet as you.
Mm-hmm. And the husbands as understanding as you.
Darling.
Sweetheart.
Dottie, sweet.
What is it, Brian, darling?
Would you please pass the jam?
Here it is, honey.
Not the honey. I said the jam.
Oh. Oh, darling, you make such wonderful little jokes.
Mmm, this bread is delicious. Wherever did you get it?
Mmm, isn't it yummy? It's Mother Schultz's slightly cracked wheat bread. And Mother Schultz herself personally oversees the baking of each and every loaf.
Good old Mother Schultz.
Yes, and it's chock full of vitamins.
I should say so. Why, one slice of Mother Schultz's bread is equal to a pound of roast beef, four boiled eggs, or a half portion of chicken chow mein.
No wonder it's the largest selling bread. Why, I heard that everybody is eating Mother Schultz's bread.
Gee, I wonder what Mother Schultz is eating.
Oh, darling, you make such wonderful little jokes. But, sweetheart, look at the clock.
Yes, the silly old minute hand says it's time for us to leave our millions of friends all over the nation.
And what are we going to do today, dear?
Oh, what difference does it make as long as we're together?
And so, folks, ends another Breakfast with the Carters, Dottie Darling and Brian Dear, America's most perfectly married couple.
This is Dottie, darling.
This is Brian, dear.
You low-down sneak.
Yeah, double-crossing, dame.
Double-crossing, am I? Just look at this item on the radio page.
Which one?
This one, and I quote, The success of Breakfast with the Carters is due to the untiring effort of Brian Carter. His wit, his charm, his...
Well, I've got to do something in self-defense. What about your little interviews?
Well, they're all true. Look, what you were when what were you when I married you?
Hmm?
Why, I even bought my own engagement ring, and then you hawked it for $30.
All right. Didn't I give you half?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you a chance to show what you can do without me. I'm through.
That suits me. I'll show you.
Well, don't just stand there. See who it is.
Huh?
Oh. Oh, there you are. America's happiest couple.
Yeah.
I just heard the program in my car. Wonderful, wonderful. I enjoyed every minute of it. I'm the happiest sponsor in the whole world. You'll be on the air forever.
Without me, I'm leaving for Mexico in the morning.
Mexico, but...
And I'm flying to Paris tonight.
But my program.
Well, you'd better get another perfect married couple.
Oh, but I struggled so hard. When I was a little boy, I worked in a bakery. And now, after 40 years of hard work, I am Mother Schultz. You can't run out on me.
Ah, don't cry. I'll send you some flowers on Mother's Day.
Now, children, please, let's look at this sensibly. Can't you two patch things up? After all, Mother Schultz's bread is bigger than all of us.
And heavier, too. Look, I refuse to sit down to breakfast again with that man if he's going to go around saying that he's the brains of the program.
And the same goes for you.
Wait a minute. Suppose you both promised never to give another interview and I take care of all the publicity right from the factory.
Well.
I promise you'll get equal credit for the great work you're doing and you could once more be America's most perfectly married couple.
Well, I'm willing if he...
And I'm willing if...
Then it's settled. Good. I'll be here in time for the broadcast in the morning. Goodbye.
Bye.
And I want you to know that once more, you have made Mother Schultz a happy man. Good morning. What a beautiful day. And are you two lovebirds ready for this morning's broadcast?
All set. Well, that must be our announcer.
Ah, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Jerry.
Well, still got 5 minutes. The microphone's all set up. The commercial's all ready. Yep, everything's all set. Say, that was a fine picture of you in the morning paper, Mr. Carter.
A picture of me? Well, yeah. You must be mistaken.
Picture of you? What picture?
Well, yeah, right here in the morning paper. Let me see.
No, never mind, Jerry. We go on the air.
We still have a few minutes. Let me see that paper.
Here it is, right here on the radio page.
Well, get this. Handsome Brian Carter explained to your radio reporter how he taught his wife acting, diction, and directs her with... So.
Hey, put that down.
Not the microphone.
Why, you dirty, sneaking, low-down...
Put down that lamp. Put down that...
I'll put it down, all right. There.
He's out. Out cold.
We go on the air in a
minute.
Well,
don't just stand there. Get a pool motor. Get a doctor. Call in and get some water. Oh,
but there's no water on the table.
Well, pour the orange juice over him. The heck with the expense.
Stand by. We're going on the air.
Ach, du lieber. Will he be able to talk?
Quiet. We're on the air. Good morning, folks. Once again, breakfast with the Carters. And here they are, America's most perfectly married couple.
Good morning, Brian, dear.
Good morning, Dottie, darling.
Thank you, Brian Donlevy, and thanks to Alan Reed, who played Mother Schultz. All right, crew chiefs, Henry Russell and the orchestra are waiting for you with I Never Knew I Could Love Anybody.
I never knew I could love anybody if they feel like I'm loving you. I could not realize what a pair of eyes and a baby's smile can do. I'm such a mess, just can't sleep. Man, what a shame, I can't even eat. I never knew a single soul could
be so sweet. Ooh, I never knew I could love anybody, baby, like I'm loving you.
I can't eat, man.
You need some sleep, man.
Never knew a single soul could be so sweet. I never knew I could love anybody. You're the end from what I've seen. But you're all so peachy keen. I never knew I'd find a sweet one like you.
Coming back to our mic now is Kay Kaiser. And Kay, this afternoon at rehearsal, you said there was something you wanted to tell me.
Yeah, Dottie, it was about a dream I had, and you were in it.
Well, don't stand there. Tell me all about it.
Well, it happened last night. I was at home alone listening to the radio, and I heard a whole string of those detective private eye programs. You know, Sam Spade, mm-hmm. The Thin Man, The Fat Man, The Cat Man, The Rat Man. And I started getting drowsy. My dream was filled with beautiful women in trouble. Murderers lurked in every corner, and I was a daring detective. It all happened on a certain Wednesday in February, but maybe I ought to tell you something about myself. You all heard of Sam Spade? Well, I'm his brother, Deuce of Spades. High above the city, I was sitting in my private office, rubbing my private eye. When suddenly the stillness was shattered by the ringing of the phone. I picked up the receiver. Hello? Is that you, Johnny? Johnny, don't do it. No, Johnny. I'm telling you, you'll get into trouble. Don't do it, Johnny. Don't do it. Poor Johnny. I warned him not to step out of store windows all over America. I just got settled back in my seat again when she walked in. She spoke.
Hey, boss.
Sorry, he walked in first. He was my private pupil. You see, every private eye has a private pupil. He said...
Say, boss, there's a dame out in the waiting room.
What's she look like? Give me a rundown.
Well, she looks a lot like that L'Amour dame in pictures. Uh-oh. She's about 5'2¼", weighs about 114 pounds and 7 ounces... Got on rhinestone earrings set in silver, blue eyes, gray dress with a leather belt and a silver buckle.
How are her legs?
I didn't notice.
That's the trouble with you. You never get any details.
Should I go back and look?
Never mind. I'll take care of it myself.
Hello, big boy.
What a doll she was. Our eyes met. Our lips met. Then we met.
Hello.
Hiya. Would you mind coming into my office? We can talk there.
Thanks.
Make yourself comfortable. Have a drink?
No, thanks, Kay, but go ahead, have one yourself.
Thanks.
Aren't you going to drink it?
Never touch the stuff, just like the exercise. Well, kid, what'd you come to see me about?
I just killed 4 men.
4 men, huh? Tell me, was it in cold blood?
Look, I just kill them. I don't take their temperature.
Okay, sister, spill it.
Well, I killed them, but I did it for my sister, I tell you. She's a famous scientist, and a certain gang of international spies have kidnapped her.
Where's your sister being held captive, Dottie?
In an ancient, secluded castle on top of a remote mountain hideout.
Where is it?
About 2 blocks from here.
Let's go. There I was, sitting in the car next to this beautiful doll. He had everything a woman should have, including a high dramatic shift. I figured if I could get her sister out of the gym, I might be able to get places with this dame. There was only one thing that could stop me from making a hero of myself. I was a coward. So I said to her, "Is this the place?"
"Yes." "My sister, the scientist, is on the second floor behind that barred window."
"I'll use my skeleton key. We'll sneak upstairs." Slowly we climbed the shadowy stairs. This gorgeous creature beside me. She must have known how I felt about her because suddenly she cocked her eye at me. And I cocked my eye at her. And there we were for one mad moment, cockeyed together. We walked down the corridor.
"There's the room, Kay. There she is, my sister, the world-renowned scientist, Madame Fury. Sister, sister, speak to me."
"Gee whiz, what took you kids so long?"
I went to get help from this private eye."
"Private eye? He looks more like a public jerk."
"This is a scientist?"
"Yeah, big boy. You want to see my cyclotron?"
Tell me, sister dear, what have they done to you?"
"I've been kept prisoner here for 2 weeks, tied to this chair. And there are 18 men in the gang, and every time they come in, each of them kisses me."
"Don't worry. I'll get you out of here."
"Look, sonny, why don't you mind your own business?"
"Quiet. Quiet, I hear someone coming."
"Yeah, it must be the gang of spies."
"Hey, look. Look out the window. They've got the house surrounded."
"And they've all got machine guns."
"Don't worry. I'll take care of this. Here they come." And that, Dottie, is how I solved the case."
"But tell me, Kay, what happened to you?"
"Well, the gang captured me. They shot me 48 times. They stabbed me, and then they put me in a barrel of cement and dropped me in the ocean."
"But if they did all that to you, how is it possible that you're still alive?"
"I don't know. I guess I'm just lucky."
"Thanks a million, Kay. You were great. Well, I'm looking forward to having you all back with us again next Thursday. Because we're expecting a visit from Brian Ahern and Hal, the great Gildersleeve Perry. To Brian, Don Levy, and Kay Kaiser, a big kiss for each of you. Your appearance here contributes to a fine cause, the establishment of the American Federation of Radio Artists Welfare Insurance Fund. This is Dorothy L'Amour saying, we'll be thinking of you.
The Seal Test Variety Theater, on Tuned 2 yesterday from February 24th, 1949 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of variety on Tuned 2 yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for the Orson Welles Radio Almanac, a CBS broadcast from May 24th, 1944.
Welcome, one and all, to the sign of the Flying Red Horse. Mobile Gas and Mobile Oil bring you Orson Welles.
Good evening, everybody. This is Orson Welles in the Mercury Wonder Show, broadcasting tonight from the Air Service Command Training Center at Fresno, California. You know, we've been doing magic shows in the Army camps for more than a year now, so tonight we thought we'd do a few of our tricks for you on the broadcast. I usually open the show with the Indian rope trick, and as my assistant, I usually use Gypsy Rose Lee. She's quite a magician herself, you know. You should see her make things disappear. But the Indian rope trick, is one in which I cause a coiled rope to rise slowly from the floor and to stand on end. Then I have Gypsy Rose Lee climb up the rope and vanish, followed by a serviceman from the audience who also climbs up the rope and vanishes. I had to stop doing the trick. Took me 30 seconds to get him up there and 2 weeks to get him down. So, come on down the midway, folks. You're just in time to see the greatest magic show you've ever listened to.
Hurry, 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 right this way for the big show, folks. The Mercury Wonder Show for servicemen. That means you, soldier. If you got your girl with you, bring her in. She'll be amazed. She'll be astounded. She'll be thrilled. There are no lights in the balcony.
Oh, a magic show. Let's go in.
Oh, nuts to that, honey. Let's get going.
What's your price?
I only got a 6-hour pass.
The Mercury Wonder Show, folks.
It's a 4F joke, you know that.
For sale the Magnificent.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, I greet you in the words of the mysterious East.
Mashallah, inshallah, abacadabra. Sure, 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 sure.
May your shadows never be less. Tonight, we're going to attempt to entertain you with a few feats of conjuring, sleight of hand, legerdemain, prestidigitation, and hanky-panky.
Bring out the tape.
For my next illusion, I shall produce from thin air, not a goldfish bowl, not a rabbit, but a beautiful lady. Now, watch me very closely. Gabatha, inshallah, mashallah, abacadabra. Sure, 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 sure. Nothing happened. Maybe I sang it in the wrong key. Sure, 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 sure. Slide whistle. Heavens to Betsy, I hit the jackpot. There are two of them. Gentlemen, I give you a double feature. Two scintillating young stars with one name and one face. That gorgeous parlay from the picture Andy Hardy's Blonde Trouble, the Wild Twins. Hello, girls.
Hello.
Hello, girls. Oh, you said hello. Certainly nice to meet you, girls, face to face, to face, to face. You know, when you girls arrived here this afternoon, there was quite a reaction from the men around the field. It's the first time I ever saw a pilot come in ahead of his plane. Which one of you girls is the spokesman for the team?
I am.
Well, maybe I'd better start out by asking you to identify yourselves. Which is Lynn and which is Lee?
She is.
Well, let me put it this way. If I were to ask Lynn for a date tonight, who'd be waiting for me when I arrived at your house?
Our mother.
Mother, doesn't this... Girls. Girls, doesn't your mom allow you to go out with boyfriends?
Oh, she's angry with Lee now because Lee's in love.
Lee's in love? Well, love's a perfectly natural thing.
I know, but she's in love with an old man. He's 27.
27?
How old are you, Mr. Wells?
I'm practically falling apart.
On the screen, you look much younger.
Oh, on the screen, I look much younger.
Yes, I saw you in Jane Eyre, and I thought it was wonderful.
Oh, really? Thank you. What'd your sister Lynn think of it?
Oh, she's the intelligent one.
Well, as you know, girls, we're in the midst of a magic show. I wonder, how would you two like to assist me in a trick?
We'd love to.
Fine. Assistant? Bring out a box and a saw.
Well, what kind of a trick is it, Mr. Wells?
You'll see. You girls always work together.
Always.
Never been parted.
Never.
Tonight, it's going to be different. Oh, by the way, girls, this is my assistant, Ben Alley Hakim Itznik, known locally as the Yodeling Goldbrick.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Don't be so formal, girls. Run your fingers through his hair. I said his hair, not his pockets. Are you the Wild Twins or the Summer Sisters? All ready with the equipment, Hakim?
Yes, master.
Now watch closely, everybody. I'll now saw two women in half. This This is known as making a four the hard way.
Oh, Mr. Wells?
Yes, girls?
Instead of doing a trick, why can't we just sing a song?
Well, for that you need an orchestra. I merely utter the magic words, Lud. Lud Gluskin and Presto.
I fell in love with the leader of the band. I was alone and he seemed to understand. But he had no ring for this finger on my hand. So I said farewell, farewell to love. I'll never, never fall. No, I'll never, never fall. I swear I'll never fall in love again. Then I lost my heart to the boy who plays the sax. Night after night, he recorded tunes on wax. I wanted romance, but he wanted to relax. So I said farewell, farewell to love. I'll never, never fall. No, I'll never, never fall. I swore I'd never fall in love again. He blew his horn and my heart turned upside down. He blew his horn and I bought a wedding gown. He blew his horn, then he blew right out of town. So once more I shoved romance away. Then next on my list was that day who beats the drum. But he made that noise with his bubble chewing gum. So once more I gave romance the bird. We'll never fall again for our leader or his man. We're through with all musicians from now on. We're going back to that shack by the track in Hackensack. Jim, maybe Joe, or even Jack. We're leaving for good and we're never coming back. Goodbye, boys, farewell, so long, adieu.
Little girls, don't go away.
No, no, you can't make a stay.
Well, just one moment before you stray. I've got some jive I'd like to play.
The assistance of two members of the audience, anyone at all, you, sir, in the first row. Thank you, and you. Thank you very much. We're continuing now with our magical extravaganza. Here we are. What is your name, please? What's your name, Sergeant?
Jimmy McDevitt.
Sergeant, say that again in the microphone, will you, over there, Sergeant? Sergeant
Jimmy McDevitt, technician, fourth grade.
And you, sir?
Frank Adams.
And your rank?
Private.
I said, said your rank?
No class.
I see. Well, Private Adams, this is Sergeant McDevitt.
We've met.
Good. Well, I'm going to ask you... I'm going to ask you, Private Adams, to assist me in putting the sergeant into that small, uncomfortable-looking box over there. Do you think you can do it?
I'll force myself.
While the sergeant is stepping in, Private Adams, will you test the box to see if there are any secret panels?
Yes, sir.
Just test it. You did that knocking very professionally, Private Adams, in civilian life. Were you a magician's assistant?
No, hotel detective.
I see. Well, Sergeant, before we close the lid on you, I want to explain the trick. On the count of 10, you will have vanished from this box, and in your place, there will appear a beautiful woman. Very well now. You crawl down, Sergeant. We close the lid, and you count to 10.
1, 2, 3.
While the sergeant is counting to 10, I'd like everybody to watch me very closely. I take this magic prayer paper, and whoosh. Whoosh, I touch a match to it, and who have we here but that luscious starlet from Universal Pictures, Miss Lois Collier. These magic prayer papers are a dollar apiece. They're agents in all aisles of the theater.
Excuse me, Orson. I'm sorry if I'm a little late. I had to pass those sentries again.
Oh, yes. Those sentries are really doing their job. When we arrived at the gate this afternoon, the sentries took no chances. The microphone's a little high for you, dear, and I'd have to get down on my knees to play it with you. They let me right in, but they searched Lois for 2 hours. They searched so long they forgot what they were looking for. I'd like to explain this trick to you. There's a sergeant in this box who just counted to 10 and disappeared. Look, I open the lid.
28, 29.
We'll come back to that later.
You know, Austin, I've always wanted to entertain servicemen.
Uh-huh.
I sort of envy a performer like yourself. You do a big magic show for them, but, well, it's different with me. What have I got to offer these boys?
Well, no coaching from the audience, please. Private Adams, I'm going to need your cooperation this trip. I'm going to ask you to put your arm around Miss Collier. You think you can do it?
I'll force myself.
All right, wait a minute, soldier. You just put your arm around her, you know. She's an actress, not an infiltration corps. Maybe I better explain this trick so you know what you're doing.
He knows what he's doing.
Well, now, when Private Adams counts three, the young lady will vanish before your very eyes and appear in this box from which Sergeant Collins has just disappeared. As you can plainly see, I opened the lid.
And one.
Sorry, Lois. It doesn't seem to be working out quite on schedule. Maybe I'd better throw myself into a trance. I close my eyes. I'm drifting, 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 miles above the earth, high, high, up above the clouds, high, high, high. Pilot to tower, coming in for a landing. What's that, Donovan? Oh, sure. And presto, I open the lid. I open the lid.
101. 602.
Now Lois Collier's in the box. That's half the trick, Sergeant. You're supposed to have vanished.
Sure.
And now, folks, the original Miss 5x5, one of the great blues singers, Miss Helen Andrews, and our all-star combination of jazz players in blues in E flat.
Thank you.
Half a century ago, there was a Dr. Hyde who was a missionary in the South Seas and who's remembered today because he wrote a public letter to a reverend brother of his, a certain Dr. Gage. In this letter, Dr. Hyde attacked the character and memory of a Catholic priest who had died 2 years before in the leper colony at Molokai. This priest, Dr. Hyde declared, was dirty, coarse, headstrong, and bigoted, and not pure in his personal life. Now, this priest, whom Dr. Hyde called dirty and impure, was none other than the martyr, Father Damien, whose selfless devotion to his island parish was climaxed on that Sunday morning in 1885 when he commenced his sermon not with the accustomed words, "My brethren," but with a terrible and heart-rending address, "We lepers." Dr. Hyde's letter was printed in a Sydney newspaper, and that miserable cleric may well have regretted to his dying day that it was ever noticed by the literary gentleman whose answer I'm going to read to you now. Sydney, February 25th, 1890, to the Reverend Dr. C.M. Hyde, Beretania Street, Honolulu, sir. You may remember that you have done me several courtesies for which I am prepared to be grateful, but there are duties which come before gratitude and offenses which justly divide friends. Your letter to the Reverend H.B. Gage is a document which, in my sight, if you had filled me with bread when I was starving, if you had sat up to nurse my father when he lay a-dying, would yet absolve me from the bonds of gratitude. You belong, sir, to a sect, I believe my sect, which has enjoyed and partly failed to utilize an exceptional advantage in the islands of Hawaii. This is not the place to enter into the degree or causes of their failure, but this much must be plainly dealt with. In the course of their calling, the missionaries, or too many of them, grew rich. It may be news to you that the houses of missionaries are a cause of mocking on the streets of Honolulu. It will at least be news to you that when I returned your civil visit, the driver of my cab commented on the size, the taste, and the comfort of your home on Beretania Street. No, your sect, and remember, as far as any sect avows me, it is mine, has not done ill, in a worldly sense, in the Hawaiian kingdom. When calamity befell their innocent parishioners, when leprosy descended and took root in the islands, to that prosperous mission and to you, as one of its adornments, God sent at last an opportunity. I know that others of your colleagues look back on the inertia of your church and the intrusion and decisive heroism of Damien with something almost to be called remorse. I'm sure it is so with yourself. I'm persuaded your letter was inspired by a certain envy. But, sir, when we have failed and another has succeeded, when we have stood by and another has stepped in, when we sit and grow bulky in our charming mansions and a plain, uncouth peasant steps into the battle under the eyes of God and succors the afflicted and consoles the dying and is himself afflicted in his turn and dies upon the field of honor, the battle cannot be retrieved. It is a lost battle and lost forever. Your church and Damien's were in Hawaii upon a rivalry to do well. You having in one huge instance failed and Damien succeeded, I marvel it should not have occurred to you that you were doomed to silence. That when you had been outstripped in that high rivalry and sat inglorious in the midst of your well-being, in your pleasant rooms, and Damien, crowned with glories and horrors, toiled and rotted in that pigsty of his under the cliffs of Kalawao, you, the elect who would not, were the last man on earth to collect and propagate gossip on the volunteer who would and did. I think I see you, for I try to see you in the flesh as I write these sentences. I think I see you leap at the word pigsty. He was a coarse, dirty man. These were your own words. And you may think I am come to support you with fresh evidence. In a sense, it is even so. Damien has been too much depicted with a conventional halo. Such information as I have, I gathered on the spot from those who knew him well and long, who beheld him with no halo. These gave me what knowledge I possess, and I learnt it in the place itself, Kalawao, which you've never visited. You, I imagine, to be one of those persons who talk with cheerfulness of that place which oxen and wain ropes could not drag you to behold. You, who do not even know its situation on the map, probably denounce sensational descriptions, stretching your limbs the while in your pleasant parlor on Beretania Street. When I was pulled ashore there one early morning, there sat with me in the boat two sisters bidding farewell in humble imitation of Damien to the lights and joys of human life.
One of these wept silently. I could not withhold myself from joining her. Had you been there, nature would have triumphed even in you. And as the boat drew nearer and you beheld the stairs, crowded with abominable deformations of our common manhood, and you saw yourself landing in the midst of such a population as only now and then surrounds us in the horror of a nightmare, what a haggard eye you would have rolled over your reluctant shoulder toward the house on Beretania Street. Had you gone on? Had you found every fourth face a blot upon the landscape? Had you visited the hospital and seen the butt ends of human beings lying there, almost unrecognizable, but still breathing, still thinking, still remembering? You would have understood that life in the lazaretto is an ordeal from which the nerves of a man's spirit shrink, even as his eye quails under the brightness of the sun. You would have felt it was, even today, a pitiful place to visit and a hell to dwell in. And observe, that which I saw and suffered was from a settlement purged, bettered, beautified. It was a different place when Damien came there and made his great renunciation and slept that first night under a tree amidst his rotting brethren, alone with pestilence, and looking forward with what courage, with what pitiful shrinkings of dread, God only knows, to a lifetime of dressing sores and stumps. You say that Damien was coarse. It's very possible you make us sorry for the lepers who had only a coarse old peasant for their friend and father. Damien was dirty, you say. Think of the poor lepers annoyed with this dirty comrade. Damien was headstrong. I believe you're right again, and I thank God for his strong head and heart. Damien was not sent to Molokai, but went there without orders. I have heard Christ in the pulpits of our church held up for imitation on the ground that his sacrifice was voluntary. Damien had no hand in the reforms, you say. If ever man brought reforms and died to bring them, it was he. There's not a clean cup or towel in the bishop home, but dirty Damien washed it. Damien, you say, was impure in his personal life. How do you know that? Is this the nature of the conversation in the house on Beretania Street, which the Camden envied, driving past racy details of the misconduct of the poor peasant priest toiling under the cliffs of Molokai? When I was there, I heard complaints of Damien. Why was this never mentioned? True, I'd heard it once before. I must tell you how. There came to Samoa from Honolulu one who in a public house on the beach volunteered that Damien had been guilty of misconduct and had sickened from having contact with lepers. The man sprang to his feet. I'm not at liberty to give his name, but from what I heard, I doubt if you would care to have him to dinner in Beretania Street. You miserable little, here's a word I dare not print, it would so shock your ears. If the story were 1,000 times true, he cried, can't you see you're 1,000,000 times lower for daring to repeat it? Reverend sir, I'll suppose your story to be true. I will suppose, and God forgive me for supposing, that Damien faltered and stumbled in his narrow path of duty. I'll suppose that in the horror of his isolation, perhaps in the fever of disease, he, who was doing so much more than he had sworn, failed in the letter of his priestly oath. He, who was so much a better man than either you or me, who did what we would never dreamed of daring, he too tasted our common frailty. Oh, the pity of it. The least tender should be moved to tears, the most incredulous to prayer. And all that you could do was to pen your letter to the Reverend H.B. Gage. Is it growing at all clear to you what a picture you've drawn of your heart? You had a father. Suppose this tale were about him and some informant brought it to you, proof in hand. I'm not making too high an estimate of your emotional nature when I suppose you would regret the circumstance, that you would feel the tale of frailty the more keenly since it shamed the author of your days, and that the last thing you would do would be to publish it in the religious press. Well, the man who tried to do what Damien did is my father, and the father of the man in the public bar, and the father of all who love goodness. And he was your father, too. If God had given you the grace to see it. Signed, Robert Louis Stevenson.
Thank you. Gas and Mobil Oil invite you to listen next week, same time, same station, to Orson Welles. Mr. Welles' guest is Lynn Barry. Lois Collier appears through the courtesy of Universal Studios, whose current release is This is the Life. Lee and Lynn Wilde appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the White Cliffs of Dover. John McIntyre speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Radio Almanac, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 24th, 1944 on CBS, bringing the curtain down on this hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.